Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. As you know, my name is Rick Leaf. I'm a host of Entertaining Ideas and the author of Four Homeless Millionaires. We're in chapter 38 of the audiobook. The Scandinavian centipede is closer than it appears. Gripping. We'd arrived in Stockholm, capital city of Sweden. Stockholm was built on 14 islands connected by 57 bridges. It's an incredible archipelago with over 30,000 islands. After all the relatives on Zara's side of the family that we've stayed with, Sweden is the first time my extended family has made an appearance. My grandfather immigrated to Canada from Sweden and my grandmother from Norway, so Scandinavia is the land of my ancestors. Though our surname has always been pronounced Leaf, no one ever got that from the Swedish spelling of L-E-U-F, so my dad legally changed his last name before I was born. Heading up to Stockholm was my first opportunity to visit the Leaf clan as we made our way to Krister and Lena's place in Järfälla. Krister and my dad are cousins, but honestly I have no idea if that makes me a second cousin or once removed. We started our first day with a great Swedish breakfast at about 9 a.m. It was Scandinavian fare with toast, flat and hard breads, cheese, marmalade, tomatoes, and some ham. I didn't realize Zara and I were raising carnivores, but any time meat is included at a meal, they attack it with passion. In this case, gobbling up all of the ham set out for everybody at the table. Distinctly absent from the menu were the processed sugar cereals so common back home. I was having one of those delusional moments as a parent when you believe that your children actually share your values and lifestyle choices, like abstaining from highly refined sugary breakfast cereals. Of course, no sooner had I patted myself on the back for being such an amazing father than I was sent to the grocery store to buy some frigging Honey Nut Cheerios. For about a half an hour, I was an awesome dad. Krister drove us to the station and we hopped on the train into Stockholm. We were heading to the Vasa Museum. I found it fascinating, this Scandinavian culture with its Viking heritage and reputation for sailing all over the world, wreaking havoc and mayhem, also has one of the most incredible nautical faux pas in naval history. On August 10th, 1628, a 64-gun warship, christened the Vasa, sank in the Stockholm harbor on its maiden voyage. It didn't even sail 1,500 meters before it rolled over and plunged to the bottom. 333 years later, they managed to raise the ship from the ocean floor, making it the only fully intact 17th century ship that has ever been salvaged. We watched a historic video in the theater that really set the stage before the official English tour started. I was just getting my flip out of my pocket when the tour guide walked by me. She was an imposing woman, easily as tall as I am, with the shoulders of a linebacker. Then she opened her mouth and announced the tour was starting. It was such a deeply resonant, manly voice that I had immediately thought I was experiencing firsthand some of that world-renowned progressive Swedish culture where museums openly hire cross-dressing tour guides. In the end, she was all woman. Except maybe her vocal cords. At one point, Krister leaned over to me and said, "I never realized that we actually can sound like the Swedish chef on the Muppets." From the museum, we took the ferry to Gamlestan, Stockholm's old town, and one of the best-preserved medieval city centers in the world. Gamlestan was built during the 1300s, and we spent hours walking through the buildings and neighborhoods older than our country. A personal highlight for me was the monument of St. George and the Dragon. If you're like me and grew up being dragged to church in North America, you really need to get out and see the awesome stuff in churches around the world. The Cathedral of Stockholm, called was consecrated in 1306. All the royal weddings and coronations take place there, and thousands of people are buried under the church. The 15th-century statue of St. George and the Dragon depicts an armored knight who has run his lance through the dragon and with his raised sword is about to deliver a killing blow. Hanging from a chain around his neck is a box supposedly containing St. George's bones. The dragon is lying on its back, surrounded by odds and sods and consumed body parts, while the dragon's offspring are crawling about the rubble. The dragon is bisexual with male and female naughty bits, symbolizing evil can multiply on its own. The dragon's one foreleg is clutching the broken lance, while the hind leg is pushing on the horse's belly. The fact that this is in a church is just awesome. It was an idyllic, beautiful spring day as we sat and drank cappuccinos in Stort Ergot. Oh, God. The oldest square in Gamlestad. Why didn't I just say that? Well, Krister told us the story of the Stockholm Massacre that took place in this very square back in 1520. The kids have begun to realize that there are never any stories about a group of citizens that gathered to pet fuzzy bunnies and bake cookies together. It's always massacres and beheadings and famines and the storming of gates with ensuing atrocities. Kind of makes a guy hope that we can live in a time where nothing much happens. Our second day at Krister and Lena's was, oh my God, Valborgsmorgon. Absolutely not the way that's pronounced. The holiday with a million-dollar name. The Swedish king, Carl XVI Gustav, is turning 60, but the holiday really isn't about him. Valborg, can I just call it something? Valborg is named after a nun named Valborg. I shortened it, look at that. Who was made a saint on May 1st, 779. And this date carries her name in the Swedish calendar. Viking fertility celebrations took place around April 30th, and due to Valborg being declared a saint at that time of year, her name became associated with the celebrations. Valborg was worshipped in the same way that Vikings had celebrated spring, and as they spread throughout Europe, the two dates became mixed together. Across Sweden, people gather in the evening on Valborgsmorgon to light large bonfires and sing songs of spring. But by the time we arrived, the sun had set behind the hills, leaving us to walk through the forest, illuminated by a bluish, dusky half-light. It was early spring, so the trees were still free of leaves and foliage. As we made our way through the woods, we could hear a chorus of male voices singing. It sounded like a choir of dwarves from Moria. Eventually, we discovered the clearing where a men's choir was singing traditional spring songs. A huge bonfire had just been lit. The chorus of voices singing and chattering in a sing-songy Swedish lilt, the crisp, clear spring air and the smell of wood smoke and crackling branches created a mystical vibe. Riel was enamored with a little long-haired pocket puppy sporting ribbons and bows in national colors, while Zion and I picked out the guys in charge of the fireworks. No matter where you go in the world, it's the guys in army jackets with ponytails who like to blow things up. The next day, Krister dropped us off and we caught the train to Central Station and met his brother Pelle. It was May Day, and there were demonstrations going on in different parts of Stockholm as political parties and workers' groups protested. Pelle took us to the Drottningholm Palace, the private residence of the Swedish royal family, before taking us for a drive through the countryside. Pelle is one of those drivers who is aware that he is driving at his own pace and feels no compulsion to conform to those around him. As we wound our way along the narrow country road, I watched the line of cars in the rearview mirror growing like a Scandinavian centipede. I loved it when Pelle acknowledged the traffic jam by simply saying, "I like my speed." We eventually made our way back to Järfälla, where Krister and Lena organized a family reunion. We had an awesome time meeting distant rallies and partying together as guitars were passed around and we all took turns sharing songs. As the sun began to set and the temperature started to drop, we moved inside and gathered around the piano. I took up a spot at the back of the room with Krister and Leonard's daughter Johanna and her partner Jonas, as we joked and commented on the scene before us. Perhaps thinking that the Canadians were being left out because they'd been singing in Swedish, somebody asked me for a request. I thought ABBA would be the great unifier. Which is when the wheels really trumped the tracks and everything fell apart in a heap of unknown chords and lyrics. ABBA wept. Zion was chowing down on the food, but later that night discovered he's allergic to avocado. Wanting to describe his ordeal in dramatic terms, he mistakenly assumed that because it sounded like diarrhea, it also meant something like diarrhea, and pronounced, "That's the last time I eat avocado. I got wicked gonorrhea." The next day we headed south, about 5 hours from Stockholm, to Småland, to the Kingdom of Crystal. Hand-blown glass has been made in Sweden since the 1700s. To retain their distinct identity in the changing world market, around a dozen glasswork studios and a handful of municipalities joined together to create a singular brand called Costa Boda. We reserved a room hostel at Langjazo for 520,000 kroners, which at roughly 52 euros was the cheapest accommodations we'd found in Europe. We arrived to find that renting sheets for the night equaled the price of the room, so we spent the next hour driving around Emma Boda searching for someone who spoke enough English to help us buy sheets. Charades ensued. In the morning, we headed out to watch the glassblowers at work in Arafors, Orafors, Costa, and Maleras. This was a magic day, and we wish we'd known more about the Kingdom of Crystal, because we would have spent days in the area. The different studios are located just down the road from each other, so once you're there, you can easily jump from studio to studio. We had no idea what artists could do with glass, and we're just mesmerized. This was the only place on our entire trip we broke the rules and bought something to bring home. Historically, when the glassblowers went home, workers, hunters, and transients, whose iron cools rubbies, would gather in the glassworks for heistil, which means herring in the foundry. Salted herring would be fried in the pipe where during the day finished glassware had been cooling. You could still experience heistil in Grazkeret. Oh my god, I'm just killing these places. And enjoy trays of crispy pork, Östermalm sausage, baked potatoes, lingonberry jam, and Småland curd cake. Long tables are set out as food is heated up in the large furnace while musicians sing songs and tell stories. We didn't know any of this before we got there. For our next trip to Sweden, we're packing some sheets and spending a week.